And good evening. It is Intuitive Soul Radio with your host, Lori Houston. And tonight we are blessed with having an interview with Darwin Stevenson, and he is the author of Inspiration Divine, Your Purpose and Path to Health, Happiness, and Enlightenment. Now, this is quite an extensive book, and I was quite refreshing because it has a lot of different and new concepts that I'm very curious to explore. So I'm very honored to welcome you, Darwin, to our show.
Oh, thank you, Lori. It's a blessed day to be with you. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. So let's kind of, I guess, you know, usually I start with what has been your journey that has gotten you to this point. And I'm going to guess it was an interesting journey. Now, what I found fascinating is at the end of the book, you write that it took you only 21 days to write this book, and clearly you are aligned with your purpose, but how did you get to that place?
Yeah, that is an interesting journey. I think I would characterize myself as a regular Joe, you know, everyday person that had no intention of writing a book or experiencing enlightenment, and I was approached by a book manager who had a client who had experienced his own enlightenment experience and was struggling to find an editor to pare his writings down to something that could be published as a book. And after going through several editors, they asked me if I would take a look at what he had written and see if I could help him organize it into a book. And I thought that was a great opportunity for me to look at something that was fresh and new that had never been published before. And at the same time, I was just about to leave on vacation with my family to Wyoming. And so with technology, the way things are today, I went ahead and sent the data, the manuscript, if you will, ahead to Wyoming to be printed. And as we were swinging through there on a camping trip, I was going to pick it up and read it on my vacation. And that's exactly what I did. And after the family had been put to bed one evening in the wonderful Wyoming summer as a thunderstorm was coming in over the mountains. It hadn't quite hit where I was with a warm breeze blowing across the porch. I began to read what he had put together. And as he was describing this new relationship that we could have between the body and the mind, I started to try to understand what he was trying to say. And he was explaining about this distinct relationship that the mind has with the body and how both were intelligent pieces of us. And as I started to try to organize this information and logically put it together in a way that both I could understand and how others might be able to understand his work, it kept falling apart. Every time I would put an argument together of why this is the way things are, it was like a three-legged stool that was missing one of the legs. You know, the logical conclusions just kept falling apart. And I was really struggling of how to understand his work. And then I think I even said it out loud. I said, you know, what is missing? What is the missing piece here? And it seems obvious now, but it was spirit. It was a body, spirit, and mind. The spirit was completely lacking in this understanding. And that message came to me, and you know, I wrote it down, and it continued, though. And for 21 days, I continued to get more and more information so quickly and rapidly and without myself actually participating really in the process that I could do very little other than just journal and write it down. And yes, over that period of time, I think the first 10 days, I had written 10,000 words, wow. And it just continued to come to me. And interestingly enough, when I was finished, it had wrapped up entirely logically and making sense in this body of work, which I decided the best way to get this message out to the rest of humanity is book form.
Well, and it is, you know, uniquely different. There are things that you've brought up that, when you bring them up, make complete sense, but I don't know that I've actually... And I've done a lot of reading because I've done a lot of interviews and I've done a lot of reading prior to that. But I don't know that I've actually ever seen them, you know, brought together in such a way. And you certainly have combined science with metaphysics or spirituality, which also has been done in varying different ways. But again, not quite the same way as you have brought it together. And anyway, I have lots of ideas or questions with regards to what you've written. So let's get into, I guess, some of the meat of what you've written. And of course, your journey in trying to understand this person's book is exactly, you know, that missing link. And so you've really brought three areas together, which is body, spirit, and mind. And you refreshingly discuss the mind as being something that we don't have a lot of control over, which a lot of people, and especially for the last few years, I mean, it has all been about controlling your mind and, you know, thinking positive thoughts, and you will be you will be able to manifest everything you dream of. And so there's been a lot of information out there that clearly doesn't work for everybody, and I think you've brought together some of the reasons why.
Yeah, one of the things that I found most interesting about this information, you know, I'll just share with your listeners that as this information came to me, that was beyond my own experience, understandings of physics and the way the universe operates that I previously had no understanding of. And secondly, things came to me that I initially disagreed with. And for me, that was the really early signs that this was something divine and not of my own mind creating this information. But one of the things I found so refreshing about this perspective, it's funny because I sound like I'm the reader, not the writer, and I actually do not consider myself the writer, but as this information came to me, this concept of the mind not being our enemy and something that is not supposed to be conquered, but rather that is an integral part of us, but so too, just like you can control your voice from speaking, but you can't control that voice in your head from talking. It's not entirely you. You know, we are not our mind. We're more than that. It's a component of us, but it's not the entire definition of who we are. And that perspective that the mind is not something to be conquered or to be referred to as a disease is something that after I was able to really understand the integral body, spirit, and mind definition of who I am, was actually quite liberating. And, you know, as you explore different techniques to try to, you know, attain consciousness or to find peace in your life, such as meditation, to find that, you know, you're really not supposed to conquer the mind, but rather to learn to work with it, was actually quite refreshing and liberating for me.
Yeah, and I think that could help a lot of people in this journey, because I think a lot of us are trying, you know, certainly there's an aspect of us that, you know, we can connect with, whether we connect in our heart, our third eye, our higher point, wherever it is that we make that connection, where is the deeper part of our spirit, or the part that we bridge to our spirit, we still have that mind aspect that, as you say, it's really part of, it's really here to protect us, and it's really here to help us move forward. But because it's a lot of it's unconscious, because clearly there's, like they say, 95% of our mind is in the unconscious. Those thoughts, those voices, how we react and respond are often part of the unconscious that we're not really always aware of. So it is kind of refreshing to know that we can't actually stop that voice. We can do some things with regards to our body and our spirit that assist us to sort of quiet that voice, but there is part of us that have to sort of transcend with it instead of trying to detach from it.
Yeah, exactly. The way I really see it is that, you know, we were designed to be the body, spirit, and mind operating as a team and working together. But unfortunately, that's not the society that we have been born into, or possibly the stage where humanity is in an evolutionary sense. We were born into a life where the mind had to be, from the very beginning, from the very moment of conception, that our mind had to be turned on and in charge to basically ensure our survival. But it wasn't designed to stay like that. But as we were born into a society that highly values the mind, and to a lesser degree does not necessarily value the body and the spirit in the same regard, that mind aspect of us was allowed to develop not in harmony with the body and the spirit, but rather on its own. And so, in a sense, when we look at our lives and see that we're out of balance, a lot of people struggle with, well, how do I even, I don't even know where to start, you know, where do I get back into balance? And I really think it's those very simple concept of body, spirit, and mind. You know, you're spending 95% of your day involved in the mental aspect of living, and how much of it is actually spent in the body and the spirit. And those are where we can start to see where we can get back into balance in our lives.
Yeah. Okay. So I loved, you know, chapter two, which is talking about meeting yourself, because that is that voice in our head. And as you clearly say, you know, we can't control it. So how could it be you? How could it be, you know, the part that we've given, as you say, 95% of our day to, when it's not just who we are?
Yeah, I mean, there's an easy test that each of us can take to do that is, you know, it's, we all know that there's times in life where it's appropriate to be quiet and not talk. And we've all had long periods of time in our life where we've, you know, essentially kept our mouth shut. But, you know, see how long you can keep that voice in your head from talking. And you'll find that in a couple seconds for most of us, maybe minutes for those that are more trained, but you'll be having a conversation in your head about how you're not talking. And so, you know, if you can't stop that voice from talking, then how can it be you? Because you can control other aspects of you, you know, not talking or not moving or just the opposite. But just like you can't stop your heart from beating, you can't stop that voice from talking. And so it's actually aspects of you, like hearing an internal dialogue of what your mind is processing. But that is a subtle distinction from believing that that is the entirety of who you are.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's really interesting that you have, we'll talk about this, but the body communicates through the five senses, and I think that's pretty understandable to most of us, although you talk about how we only receive through two of them, which is the skin through touch and the mouth through voice. You also say that the body is in the present, it's in the here and now, and I think that that would be clear to most people as well, because most people that say, you know, if you want to connect with the now, just, you know, go into your body.
Yeah, so, as you start to explore this new concept of yourself as a body, spirit, and mind, which each are intelligent and independent parts of the entire you, each of them are in communication with one another as they manage the collective you as a person. And in that, each of them is listening to the others, and they're also communicating to the others. So, you know, the body is listening to the mind and communicating to the spirit at the same time. And the language by which the body communicates is, as you mentioned, is the five senses. And so too, there are other means by which we can get into of how the spirit and the mind communicate with one another. And as you start to distinguish those languages or dimensions of how they are communicating with one another, it brings you into a new conscious, active participation in life, as opposed to a reactive experience. And so in that, the body lives in the present moment. You know, if I pinch you, you'll flinch, you know, but a couple minutes from now, your mind may remember that you got pinched, and as I come towards you with my pinchers flailed out, your mind might pull you back, but your body has completely forgotten about that. It does not live in the past. The mind does live in the past, and as we all know, oftentimes we harbor memories in our mind that keep us from truly growing in the future. And, you know, there's this example of, you know, you tell a child that don't touch the hot stove, and until they actually touch that stove and realize what it is and store that memory for, you know, future reference, there's sometimes good reason why the mind stores these memories. But also the mind tends to store memories that hold us back in the future. So, you know, the mind lives in the past, the body lives in the present moment, and the spirit, you know, lives in the future. And so, too, the mind is, you know, our egoic mind is all focused on I. It's all about me. Whereas the spirit is more focused on the collective we in the future. So in combination, we see that the body, spirit, and mind really binds the past, present, and future into this unique experience, which is being human, where no other life form that we're aware of can remember their past, be present in the present moment, and actually visualize their future and bring all three of those together into a conscious experience. And so when we slow down the process of, you know, for example, just the five senses, and realize that they are methods by which the body is understanding its place in space and time by taking in all the stimuli around us, we can start to realize that this is how the body is actively participating in the present moment. And this brings us to a more conscious experience with daily life as we go through. And, you know, a good example is, you know, you'll be walking down the street, and for whatever reason, you'll smell, you know, a tree or flowers that you normally have walked down the street 100 times. But today you notice that, and it made you pause and take a look at the beautiful flowers. And at that moment, a car drove by with an old friend that you hadn't seen in years, and you strike up a conversation. Now, in a passive experience, we just chalk that up to chance and think, oh, well, you know, I just right place at the right time. But in an active participation, we start to understand that, you know, these are the means by which our body, spirit, and mind interacts in this reality we live in, and we give pause to there's communication going on, and there's not an accident here, but I was actually brought to this moment by, you know, paying attention to my senses.
Hmm. Well, that's nicely said. Yeah, I like that. I'm not sure, although I sort of get a sense, but I'm not the only part of that that I didn't totally understand and still kind of try and wrap my head around is how you see that the spirit is in the future. And I guess what I just heard you say about how, you know, if you can visualize your future. And so I guess that's kind of what the law of attraction and the secret and some of those newer thoughts that are out there, even though a lot of them are older thoughts, but that, you know, if you can visualize, then you can create from that space instead of creating from the past, which is usually what we're creating from. But yeah, trying to grasp how necessarily the spirit is from the future, it's one of the things I'm not exactly clear about.
Yeah, so it is not really a sense of, you know, being in a particular time, but the perspective that the spirit has. So the mind has a perspective of looking into the past.
Yeah.
And so too the spirit has a perspective of looking to the future. So, you know, a good example is we may have had a bad relationship earlier in our life. And the next time we meet somebody that has similar characteristics of that person, our mind likes to trigger, oh no, we're going down that path again. Put up your roadblocks because we know what happened last time. We opened up our heart and took some chances with somebody like this. Whereas the body is in the present moment and is, you know, right there in the here and now saying, nice to meet you, you know. Whereas our spirit is not really focused on the past. It's all about the future and the collective we. And so doesn't have the same past perspective of protection, but rather is always completely focused on uniting humanity and choosing love and doing that in the future state, irregardless of what experience we've had in the past. So it's more of a perspective than it is an actual, you know, place where they operate in time and space.
Okay. That makes more sense. And I love that you talk about, you know, the spirit being the feelings through emotion and arousal, because I think, you know, that clearly that's that place that we often, you know, can remember. And usually we have an expression that kind of radiates from the soul, whether it's joy or passion or magic, or we usually have something that sort of signals to us. And usually it was from something that we were naturally attuned with when we were children, that we sort of worked really, really hard at, you know, trying to protect because our mind thought we needed to protect that pure aspect of ourself. And then it's really trying to get back to the remembering of that place.
Yeah, if you look at the spirit, I mean, I really like to conceptualize myself as, you know, I'm the eternal spirit. You know, the spirit is going to live on way beyond when this body and this mind have passed in this particular lifetime. And as that spirit is my true self, you know, but also in this reality is actually this also this combination with the body and the mind. You can imagine the spirit actually who lives in the future, so, you know, truly understands where you're going and what your possibilities are. And I don't mean a predestiny that things are already, you know, figured out for you, but rather understands where you need to go. You can imagine your spirit almost like a puppeteer, kind of sending stimuli and direction to the mind of the direction to go. And this comes in the form of feelings. So, you know, we all know that the, you know, we want nothing more than to avoid pain, and we're attracted to pleasure. It's just the simple way of the spectrum of how we're built. And so in that, you can see that this spirit has like this amazing ability to kind of get us to turn left or to turn right by conveying feelings to us. So, you know, just like when you're walking down the street and all of a sudden you smell the smell of roses, also you might be sitting there making dinner one night and all of a sudden feel happy or joy or feel melancholy. And these are ways that the spirit can actually communicate to us in this conscious experience.
Mm-hmm. Now, you also talk about there being 11 dimensions. From a lot of the teachings I've had, I've been sort of accustomed to hearing about 12, but your 11 certainly fall into place with the way the body, spirit, and mind communicate.
Yeah, so if you look at the, you know, we're all familiar with the four dimensions that, you know, we grew up with, of height, width, and depth, and this fourth dimension of time that puts us into a time and space axis. And then the five senses of the body, and then the two dimensions of emotion and a degree of arousal, which can really convey any human feeling through those two combinations. You have 11 dimensions. And coincidentally, or not coincidentally, string theory physicists have described our universe operating in not four dimensions, but actually 11, and also sometimes referred to as 12. There's actually some theories that go as high as 26. But these are the 11 dimensions of our universe. And this puts us in as life forms, in a pivotal role, and in actually a very relevant and active role in the universe in which we live, in which there are 11 dimensions that energy and communications are continually flowing. And we as human beings, we actually are able to bring those dimensions together and be the mediator between these different dimensions. And we have a very active role to play in life, as opposed to a passive role where we're just basically along for the ride. We actually have a purpose. Humanity has a purpose. There's a reason that we're here. And we each have our own individual purpose of why we're here, which is in harmony with this general humanitarian purpose. And all of these are in line with this ability to interact with the world, other human beings, through these 11 dimensions. And so, as opposed to, you know, the 11 dimensions being this esoteric physics concept that, you know, we really can't even wrap our head around, we start to realize that these 11 dimensions are actually part of the reality in which we live, and they're active in our life each and every day.
Hmm. Yeah. You talk about the collective consciousness, and that sort of ties in with what you were just talking about, how we, you know, we are an individuated aspect where we have our own individual purpose, but we also have part of the collective conscious, a purpose and really a way of expanding and growing. And I really want to talk about dark energy because that's something that I've never heard of. And usually when we refer to in the metaphysical world, dark energy, we're not usually referring to it the same way as you are. But I think that's fascinating. But talk a little bit about the collective consciousness.
Yeah, so if you, throughout history, there's been a number of writers and sages that have referred to this collective consciousness, this understanding that every thought or concept or idea that has ever been thought of and expressed by, I'll say living beings, but, you know, in our experience, human beings, is in this collective consciousness. And the best way I can really describe it is, you know, have you ever had that aha moment where an idea has suddenly just leapt into your head, or there's been a problem that you've been trying to solve and you just racked your brain over it and you couldn't figure it out, and then all of a sudden it's like it pops in there and just you don't even know where it came from, and it's brilliant and it just solves this problem so eloquently, and you have no idea where it came from. And again, you just chalk it up to, well, that's just how my crazy mind works. But no, there's actually this collective consciousness that holds every idea that has ever been thought of. And so, you know, getting back to, you know, okay, well, how do I relate to that? You know, why is there a collective consciousness? I mean, one of the things I think that we all should do as we go through this experiential life where we're listening to different sages and spiritual teachers and such that tell us how things work and, you know, the way that things operate in the world, is we should ask why. You know, why does it work that way? You know, it should be relevant to me. There shouldn't be some esoteric, weird reason that I can't relate to. It should be very easy to understand. And as it relates to collective consciousness, you know, why is there this collective consciousness? And it really gets back to the purpose of mankind, you know, why we're here. And I articulate that very simply, that we are here to choose love. And the easiest way to look at that is, in any decision that you make, there's an option of which is the more loving choice. Am I choosing love or am I choosing not love? The second piece is to unite humanity. And so any decision put before you, you know, which choice before me unites humanity and which one divides humanity? Mm. And the third, which is a little more difficult to wrap your head around, but it's to expand God's presence in the universe through our original creations. We are actually called to create that which did not exist before. And in that original creation, where we create something that has never occurred before, or someone never thought of this before, or someone ever really solved this problem, or even thought of that problem, whether that be how you arrange the gardens, the flowers in your garden, or solving a really difficult scientific problem, those original creations are contributed to this collective consciousness. And that is the means by which our universe is actually expanding. And so the more we contribute to this collective consciousness, the more our universe expands. And so you can imagine God operating outside of the constraints of our universe and, you know, creating life with a purpose, of which I've just articulated what I believe that purpose is, and peeking in on our universe and looking at this collective consciousness. And when that collective consciousness is expanding, we are fulfilling our purpose, we're choosing love, we're uniting humanity, and we're creating original creations, God provides our universe with dark energy. Now, as you mentioned, the word dark usually freaks people out because it conjures up this concept of evil and meanness and all this sort of thing. This is actually a physics term. And the reason physicists refer to dark energy as dark is simply because it doesn't absorb or reflect light. So it's dark. Right. But we know through recent discoveries that our universe is, in fact, expanding. We know that the expansion is accelerating. So it's not, you know, we had this previous concept of the Big Bang where everything blew up and expanded outwards, but the thought was that eventually it would contract. It would get to like the spring-like point where it couldn't go any further and it would start to contract back in on itself. But recent discoveries have shown us that it's not slowing down, it's actually accelerating. So our universe is actually getting bigger, and it's getting bigger faster and faster. And we know through scientific experiments that what is causing it to expand is this dark energy. And so what I'm articulating here is that we have a purpose to play in life, and we have a relationship to God. And when we fulfill that purpose, our universe, and we as well, are rewarded by more and more energy, really a life force energy that powers both our universe and us as human beings. More and more energy is pushed into our universe, which provides everything that we need to live and expand and live happy lives.
Yeah, it's fascinating, and at the same time, to some people, I guess it could be, you know, kind of daunting to think that we have won this kind of power, because I think a lot of us don't want to step in our power, but also to, you know, we like to imagine that if there is a God, you know, that they are infinitely wiser and that they've already achieved all that there is. And I think the interesting point is that as we grow, everything grows, and that's why it is our purpose to continue expanding and, or calling, as you refer to it in your book, as ascending.
Yeah, it's a really interesting concept, and it really taps into our most fundamental concept of ourselves and God. Mm-hmm. And actually, I think that it's really not in violation of how we conceive this, if you really break it down. The first thing to realize is that if you look at the 11 dimensions of our universe, and time being one of them, it's that our universe is governed by the 11 dimensions. It's not everything. So imagine that there's multiple universes, but God exists outside of these universes. And if you take your life when you were born, your grandparents, and all down the line, you take that down far enough, and there was a time before the Earth existed, and there was a time, you know, at the Big Bang, and there was a time when our universe didn't exist. And let's say there's multiple universes, and you just keep taking that back in time. Eventually, you'll come to a point where there was God, or this concept of God, and nothing else. And so, when God created the universe, or the universes, the multi-universe concept, you know, he would have created, you know, the universes out of himself. And I don't mean to imply that God has gender, but rather that God pulled the universe from what God is, and everything grew from that point forward. And so as that is, God is outside of the dimensions of our universe. God is not constrained by the dimension of time. So an interesting concept that we have a role, and that role involves us choosing love, uniting humanity, and expanding through our original creations. And this is God's intent for us. As God is not bound by the dimension of time, it means that God wants us to create these things. At the same time, he already knows the answer, because he lives in the past, present, and future, and it does not constrain by time, and as such, wants us to create everything that could possibly be created, and at the same time, really isn't bound by that concept of time if something doesn't exist now and it will exist in the future.
Right. Yeah, I like that. Let's talk a little bit about something that's a little bit more, I guess, part of what a lot of people are going through, and that is trying to, you know, understand how our mind has been working to store our experiences as memories, and how those memories often interfere with what we are wanting to achieve now, and how to sort of work through dislodging those unnecessary memories to allow the expression of our spirit.
Yeah, great point. So, you know, we went back to this example where, as a child, you know, we first touched the stove and forever remembered that that was not a good thing. And so we don't struggle with that anymore. And as we go through life, and we store these memories, we also realize that there are times when we store memories that really aren't in our best interest. And I use a great example from my daughter's experiences. When my daughter was very young, a very happy but overzealous puppy jumped all over her and scared her completely. And she, from that point forward, has been scared of dogs. And so her mind has stored this memory that, you know, dogs are bad, dogs attack me. And as she has grown up through the years, there was a time when that actually prevented her from actually, you know, engaging different dogs that are not overzealous and aren't going to attack her. And it's limited her life experience. And so we find that our mind stores these memories. And again, we're back to this question, why? You know, why does our mind do this? And it's actually on a cosmic scale. It gets back to our relationship to the universe, our relationship to God, and our, as you mentioned, our responsibility in this relationship. And so everything in life requires energy. So this precious life force energy that is infused into our universe, it actually is what powers us and our universe and provides the means for healing. It's very precious. And so every time that the body, spirit, and mind communicate with one another, it requires energy. And our mind is a very precious manager of this energy. And so when a question comes up in your life of what to do, the normal cycle would for the mind to share it with the body and with the spirit, and all three would contribute to what the decision is, what's the right thing for you to do. But that process, that loop, it takes energy, and it takes energy away from what could be used for other life forms or expanding the universe or healing that is available. And so our minds are very precious managers of that energy. And so when we have a life experience, the mind is able to store that memory with us so that the next time a similar situation is encountered, the mind doesn't have to expend energy to come to the same conclusion. And the example I give in my book is you go out on the diving board and you assess the situation of where you're at. Your body is taking in the smell of the chlorine. Your eyes are looking down to see how far it is to the water surface. Your ears are hearing the sound of children laughing in the background. Your skin is feeling the non-slip texture of the diving board. And that information is conveyed to the spirit. The spirit then assesses the situation and determines, are you on the top flight of an Olympic diving platform? Or are you sitting on a local municipal diving board? Now, if you're on that diving platform at the Olympic Center, you're probably going to be sent the feeling of fear to get you to get down because this is dangerous. Whereas if you're at the local pool, you'll probably be sent the feeling of happiness and joy. Go ahead, it's safe. And so the mind takes in that experience so that the next time we go up on the diving board, we don't have to communicate this full loop, but we can retrieve that locally. Now, that is a very precious way to manage this energy resource that we have available to us. But at the same time, as I gave the example with my daughter and the dogs, it sometimes can limit our life experience. And so we, as active participants in this conscious experience, are faced with this dilemma of how do I get rid of the memories that are not doing me any good, these unnecessary memories, and how do I retain the ones that are doing me some good, that, you know, there was a good reason that I'm storing those memories. They actually were the way, storing them is the way that I was designed. And fortunately, it's all in line with this conscious active experience. There's no guru, there's no rule book, there's no way that you can logically look at these life experiences and methodically determine which ones to keep and which ones to get rid of. But through a conscious experience, by listening to your spirit, and listening to your body, you can find that those memories will be, the ones that you don't need will go away. Because what happens when you live entirely in a mental, mind, ego-based experience is you draw everything from your past. Your entire decision-making process is pulled from your past experience and your logical way of thinking. Now imagine you've got one-third of you that's calling the shots, and you've got your very wise spirit and your very wise body there to help participate in this decision-making process. But your mind doesn't know the spirit. It doesn't know the body. It hasn't really connected to them and formed a level of trust. So your mind, with its goal to keep you alive, is essentially ignoring the body and the spirit in this co-management of you. But as you bring your body and spirit online, your mind will develop a sense of trust with them. Like with anyone else we meet in our lives, when we have experience with somebody, we learn to trust them. And so that experience, by bringing the body, spirit, and mind active in our lives and leveraging our spiritual self and our physical self in the co-management of our daily lives, we begin to have a different conscious experience. We begin to make decisions based not on just what the mind wants, but our spiritual perspective. Now, you remember when I said the spirit lives in the future and is focused on the we, not the I in the past. As you come into an experience in life and you think, what is the right decision for me to make? Imagine having your spirit participating in the conversation. Be able to say, you know what? the right thing for love and for humanity is this decision, and your body also participating in that conversation because it's an active, intelligent part of you as well. And then in this co-mingling of this conversation, you, the true self, not your mind, not your ego, not that voice in your head, is able to make a decision which is the right choice for you, not only in the moment, but also to keep your life living in harmony.
Yeah, I like that. And how do we just remain more conscious? We just bring in everything instead of just responding immediately. We sort of ask questions.
Well, that's the million-dollar question, right? How do I do this? And so that's something that is unique for every person. Mm-hmm. We've all had different life experiences. You know, some people's spirit is very active in their lives, and some people are very in tune with their bodies. And other people listening to this are probably saying, I really couldn't relate to my spirit right now, and I haven't been taking care of my body. And so the place to start is, you know, very simple for me. And I do this as much as I have all this information, I still do this on a daily basis. Towards the end of every day, I ask myself these three questions. And I try to do this not before the day is completely over, but rather, you know, before a few more hours left before I'm going to go to bed. And those three questions are, what have I done today to nurture my body? What have I done today to nurture my spirit? And what have I done today to nurture my mind? And if the answer to any one of those questions is nothing, I haven't done anything for that, then you know what you need to do for the rest of the day. You know what activities you should spend to keep yourself continually nurturing the body, spirit, and mind on a regular basis. Now, this isn't like a mandatory checklist that has to happen every 24 hours or something like that. But you can imagine, 3 months from now, if you lived your life that way each and every day of doing that daily check-in with you, what your conscious experience might be in 3 months, as opposed to if you didn't do this check-in and then in 3 months you go, where am I? You might think that, if I would have invested into my spirit every single day for the last 3 months, maybe I would actually be in a more conscious place right now.
Yeah, I like that. Talk about the forward ascension, because I think you make a really interesting point, and certainly you've kind of talked about the spirit and how often we don't really go into the spirit until we're, in the later years of our lives for some. But I think it's brilliant that you talk about the body and how it was, the most healthiest when it was born, and it actually is usually on a descension versus an ascension. And I think it's really interesting because you talk about the fact that, enlightenment happens when, two of the entities, whether it's the body, spirit, or mind, connect at a point where they're both ascending.
Yeah, this is I'll tell you about, by and far, as I've shared this information with different people, this is the one piece that every single person can relate to, because it puts their life in terms that they can understand. And I'll say that as we describe this, it might be a little difficult on the radio to conceptualize it, but if you go to my website at www.inspirationdivine.com, that I do have downloadable worksheets that people can do this very exercise with their own life as they're going through this conversation. But the idea is that as you go through life, there was this point in which you were born, which proceeds out into the future, in which at some point you will pass in this lifetime. And at the moment you were born, there's also this other axis of completeness. And so you can imagine that your mind was the most incomplete when it was born. You didn't know anything. You didn't have any conscious experience. You hadn't had any life experience. You hadn't learned anything. You didn't even have language at this point. And you began very quickly in filling up that mind of yours with information and knowledge and wisdom as you progress through life. So you can imagine as you were going through those early infant years that you were learning at an accelerated pace. And then as you went into early school years, you were just filling yourself with information. So you were on this path from being incomplete at the very day you were born on a path to becoming more and more complete. And so to our bodies, probably were, you know, for most of us, were never as healthy as we were on the day we were born. You know, we had never encountered illness. We had never caught a virus. You know, we everything was perfect the day we were born, and we actually started on this path of, you know, cellular breakdown. So we started to get sick, and our body fought off disease, and maybe some of us had some more serious problems that we dealt with. And if you see that progression over time, you can see that that path of completeness for the body is on this downward path. So it's interesting that you can see that your mind is on this swinging up and your body is on this swing of going down. And at some point in your life, those two are going to cross. And so they are in opposition to one another. So you have this energy of something declining, and you have this energy of something inclining, going higher. And as that ascension happens, there is this conflict that happens in our life. And the interesting thing that I've found with almost everybody I've talked to is as they plot their own life on this little chart, and you see where those points cross, they inevitably go, oh yeah, I know what was going on in my life at that point. You know, that's when I was having a lot of problems when I was a teenager, or that's when I had my divorce, or that's when I broke up with my boyfriend, or these sorts of things. Now, at the same time, you can plot your spirit on this chart as well, of where you started and how much you nurtured your spirit. And for a lot of people, you know, it's like the spirit was in a really good state when they were first born, but as we go in through those teenage years, there's just not a lot of spiritual nurturing going on in our society. So you can imagine the completeness, the healthiness of your spirit actually dropping. But as you start to have families and people start to think about religion and God in their life, you'll see that in their 20s and 30s that there's a return to focusing on the spirit. So spirit takes this really interesting path through our lives. Now, everybody's different, so everybody's chart will be slightly different. But by doing this, you can start to see that there is a relationship between your body, spirit, and mind to one another. And when those two or more entities cross in opposition, there's this explosion of energy in our life, which is the chaos and the drama that we see in our daily life. When we're disconnected from that experience, we don't see it coming. When we're connected to that experience, we can see that conflict is coming in our life as we don't nurture one of or more parts of us. But so too, if we put all three on a path of growth by nurturing each three of them on a daily basis, we can see that instead of them dropping, they're ascending to become more and more complete. And we have this aspect of being human. We all desire to better ourselves. You know, we're continually absorbing more and more knowledge. We know, whether we may not want to do it, but we know that eating right and working out and, you know, living an active lifestyle, we know this is good for our body. And so too, we know that investing in our spirit and participating in this active relationship with God, the divine, or however you want to conceptualize it, we know this is a good thing for us. And so putting the three in ascension, when two or more of those paths cross in ascension, where we're actively investing in them, those are those big aha moments in our life. Those are those enlightenment experiences where we suddenly get it and our life flips and we start to move into a path of actually maintaining that growth as opposed to ever dropping towards dissension again.
Hmm. Yeah, I like that. Okay. There's two really big points that I'd like to bring up. I'm looking at the time. Let's talk a little bit about the chessboard, because I think that that's, you know, kind of an interesting dilemma that we put ourselves into through the judgments that we make.
Yeah, judgment is a really hard concept for us human beings to let go of. And I've even, you know, talked to people who say that it's impossible not to live your life in judgment. And there's a distinction that should be made between actually making decisions and value decisions of, you know, is this good or bad for me right now in the moment, and truly living in judgment. But as you look at your purpose, you know, if you look at what you're here to do on the planet, and I relate to many people that, you know, upon hearing this for the first time, they may not understand what their purpose is. They may understand things that they think they're supposed to be doing, but truly to conceptualize that as a true purpose is something that I think a lot of people aren't really clear on when they first hear this concept. And I also will share that, you know, your purpose, your individual purpose, can only be revealed to you from your own connection to spirit. I can't tell you what your purpose is. Your local clergy can't tell you what your purpose is. It really has to come from your own connection to spirit. And the thing that I think all of us is, you know, it's refreshing to understand is that our spirit, the voice of which we connect to God, is active in our life each and every day. That communication is continually flowing to us, and there are triggers and messages and inspirations all around us in this message from God and as conveyed to us through our own connection to spirit. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that we're listening. We may very well be ignoring these messages all around us. And we've all had those aha moments where we've somehow those messages clicked and got through, but largely we may not be paying attention. But that understanding of purpose and what we're supposed to do here on this planet, that information is being conveyed to us all the time. And I'll tell you that every time I work with somebody and they actually discover what their purpose is, it's not like they go, wow, I never understood that. It's like reconnecting with an old friend. They go, yeah, that message has been loud and clear for a long time, but I just wasn't paying attention to it. So it's not that there's this disconnected experience, but rather there's this revelation of understanding what you've already known your entire life, not necessarily subconsciously, but you know it's there. You just haven't really brought it to the surface and focused on it. Now, as you look at people throughout history that have lived their life in purpose, whether that be, you know, Gandhi, Martin Luther King, Mother Teresa, pick whoever you think really lived their life in purpose, and it's easy to look at them and say, they lived their lives without the petty judgments that I spend a lot of my time doing. But they were a great person. You know, they had a calling. When we actually look at ourselves, we see that we sometimes are spending too much time in judgment of judging not only others, but also judging ourselves. And as we look at those great leaders that we aspire to be like, we see that they didn't spend that time focused on those petty judgments. And the beauty of this is that purpose has really nothing to do with judgment. Purpose has to do with moving forward and choosing love, uniting humanity, and expanding God's presence in the universe. And in finding our purpose, we find that, you know, judgment really doesn't have any place in our life anymore. It's not about calling everything good and bad, divine evil, right and wrong, but rather always focusing on our purpose and moving in that direction. Now, when we do that, that life force energy that we spoke of earlier, that law of attraction concept that people talk about, that energy is naturally drawn to us. Why? Because we're fulfilling our purpose. And that's why we're here. That's why the universe was created. And so this life force energy that is put into our universe from God is naturally attracted to those people that are achieving their purpose. Now, this brings up a really interesting concept that people on my Facebook fan page just today, which people can get to by going to fb.inspirationdivine.com, as in Facebook. We have an ongoing conversation every day about different spiritual concepts and topics of life and such. And someone just today asked the question, you know, not only why do bad things happen to good people, but why do good things happen to bad people? Because this concept really baffles the mind for a lot of people that are living their life according to a moral code or just simply living good lives, and they see that they're struggling and they're experiencing heartache and controversy in their lives and, you know, some real issues and real problems. And it's difficult to look at that and then see somebody else who, from the outside, in judgment, mind you, looks as if they are not living their life in a good way, and they seem to be blessed with health, riches, and lots of happiness. And you find a lot of people will look at that and say, oh, well, their day is coming, and they're not really happy. They just look like they're happy. And that may be true. But so, too, when we look at our life through this lens of choosing love, uniting humanity, and expanding God's presence through our unique creations, we can see that the lens by which we see why we're here and what we're supposed to accomplish actually starts to take on a new way of orienting ourselves in this life, in choosing those things that life force energy is attracted to us, which is it's a much easier way to make your way through life and making decisions, because it's very simple. Which of these choices before me chooses love, unites humanity, or brings forth an original creation? And as much as that seems very simple, I think people will find is when they actually apply that to their daily lives, the right decision to make for them becomes very simple.
Okay, well, here's a question that's not simple at all. And it's around optimizing energy. How does one's mind surrender to spirit? Now, you talk about, you know, the different ways, and I really, really recommend, you know, anybody who's listening that wants to have a very refreshing and different point of view to look this book up, because I think, again, you know, we only have an hour, and I think we could probably talk about four or five on this book, but you bring up a huge issue about how, well, I'll let you tell us, but basically our mind, for to optimize energy from our spirit, we have to surrender our mind, and our mind, one, is so active, and two, you know, primarily the energy goes to our body. It's just an interesting process.
Yeah, it's an interesting concept when you're thinking about yourself becoming more complete, and you think about nurturing the body, spirit, and mind, and you imagine this life force energy flowing towards you in your fulfillment of purpose, and this life force energy propels you towards your hopes and dreams. It powers yourself of who you truly are, and it also is available to you for healing yourself and others. So there's this wonderful energy that is coming to you that your true self uses to power yourself through life. And in that, you can imagine the body, spirit, and the mind taking this wonderful, you know, divine energy and, you know, absorbing it and using it to become more complete. Now, go back to this original concept of the mind. You're born with the mind turned on and in charge, and its number one job is to keep the body alive. You know, outside of everything else, if the body does not survive, the mind does not exist. Mm-hmm. So too, the spirit cannot connect to this reality in which you are a body, spirit, and mind without the body. So outside of everything else, keeping the body alive is a number one job for the mind and also for the spirit. And in doing that, the mind is continually focused on transferring any energy that is available to the body for keeping it alive. And so the easiest way I can conceptualize this for people is, can you imagine you have your newborn baby in a crib next to you while you're running on the treadmill? And you're investing in your body. You know this is a good thing for you. Can you imagine working out while that baby was crying out in pain? Could you stay on the treadmill and nurture your body while a child that you loved was in need next to you? Well, of course you couldn't. You would get off the treadmill and you would take care of baby. And so too, that is the same way that the mind and the spirit look at the body, as the body has got to be getting, you know, the energy. It's the number one priority. And so, too, the spirit at the same time, it is looking at the mind and the body in the same sense that you are looking at the child as you're running on the treadmill. Any energy that is transferred to the spirit is transferred back to the body and the mind. And so this brings up, how do I enter into this conscious experience where I can manage these three parts of me? And, you know, if you talk to a lot of spiritual teachers and such, it seems that meditation is the answer for everything. You know, any problem in your life, whether you're dealing with anxiety, depression, problem at work, you know, family problem, is you should meditate. And meditation is not necessarily this big tool that should be used for every single problem in our life. But one of the primary reasons we meditate is this brings the mind and the body to a state of peace. And so in doing that, you know, you're not actively thinking when you're meditating, and your body is usually still, unless you're doing a walking meditation, but largely the body and the mind are at peace. This allows the spirit to actually absorb this energy, because it looks at that, you know, baby metaphor we've talked about here and sees that, oh, the body and the mind are at peace. I can absorb this energy and use it for nurturing the spirit. Now, that's actually fairly easy, so we have a technique that allows that to happen. But the mind is a much more difficult concept to get around, because the mind is continually going to transfer all of that energy over to the body, because its number one job is to keep it alive. So just by bringing the body to a state of peace is not enough to allow the mind to absorb that energy for itself. And the way that we bring that about, where the mind is allowing itself to actually take some of this energy, is it needs to get out of the pole position It needs to get out of that position of managing and taking control of your life and instead turn over control of your life to the collective. Turn over the control of you to the body, spirit, and mind to manage you as a team as opposed to keeping itself in that egoic place of managing each and everything that you do. Now, that's not easy because the mind does not have a history, doesn't have a relationship, not a strong relationship with the body and the spirit. And so the means by which we bring the mind to a place where it can take this loving divine energy, which will help bring the mind to the place it needs to be, is we do that by having a more conscious and active experience with our body and mind. And in time, as the mind develops this relationship with the spirit and the body, that's the point in which it will start to take this energy and allow itself to be nurtured as well.
So much more I would love to ask. However, we are out of time. Darwin, this has been a great interview. And as I said, I think I would love to have you back and maybe we could continue some of this conversation because I find it really fascinating.
Oh, I would love to. Yeah, I love this stuff. So my purpose is to help other people discover their purpose. So that if we can do that through your radio show and help get this message out to more people, I would love to.
Great. All right. Well, thank you. I'll be in touch and we'll connect in the fall.
That sounds great.
Okay. Well, thank you, Darwin, because I found this and your book, you know, quite exceptional. So again, tell people how they can get a hold of you.
So the best way to find out more information about the book is to go to my website, and that is at www.inspirationdivine.com. And if you're on Facebook, I would highly encourage everybody to go to my Facebook fan page where you can participate in a daily conversation where every day I post different quotes and inspirational thoughts from writers and gurus and thinkers from all over the world. And there's people from all over the world, too, that chime in on the conversation of offering their perspective and asking questions and helping one another out. And it's just become a really wonderful place for everybody to connect and talk about what's important in their life.
Nice. Okay. Well, thank you again, and I look forward to the next time we can connect.
Thanks so much.
All right.